Loose Wig 9, Side 2.
After several days, they came to a Crow camp just about sundown. And when it was dark, they sneaked up to where the Crow horses were grazing, killed the horse guard, who was not thinking about enemies because he thought all the Lakotas were far away, and drove off about 100 horses. They got a big start because all the Crow horses stampeded, and it was probably morning before the Crow warriors could catch any horses to ride. Red Deer and High Horse fled with their herd 3 days and nights before they reached the village of their people. Then they drove the whole herd right into the village and up in front of the girl's teepee. The old man was there, and High Horse called out to him and asked if he thought maybe that would be enough horses for his girl. The old man did not wave him away that time. It was not the horses that he wanted. What he wanted was a son who was a real man and good for something. So High Horse got his girl after all, and I think he deserved her.
Hit me! Good God, got a bag of my. I got a bag on my own. I got a bag on my own. Hit me! Good God, I got a bag on my. I'm getting happy. Good God, get it. Set my soul. Make me set the soul.
Recording from the historic sessions at Monroe's Uptown House in 1941. It features Gillespie and Kenny Clark, along with pianist Ken Kersey and bassist Nick Fenton performing Kerouac. It's a noisy recording, but it shows what those early bebop melodies and harmonies sounded like. Recorded in 1941 at Monroe's Uptown House, featuring Dizzy Gillespie, trumpet, Kenny Clark dropping those bombs with the drums, Nick Fenton, bass, and Ken Kersey, piano. The musicians of Gillespie's generation were trying to break the musical sound barriers of the older jazz. It became apparent that the new music demanded a higher level of instrumental proficiency from a performer, a sharper sense of rhythm, and a greater knowledge of harmony. As bebop grew, many older musicians couldn't or wouldn't grow with it. Some of them said, the young musicians don't know the basics, and they play out of tune. Tenor saxophonist Coleman Hawkins was one of the few old masters who didn't think that way. Born in 1904, Hawkins was responsible for making the tenor saxophone a virtuoso instrument with his driving sense of rhythm and forward-thinking harmony. Both were in evidence in his famous 1939 recording of Body and Soul. Thank you. Coleman Hawkins spent much of the 1930s in Europe. When he returned to the States in 1939, he expected to find a lively music scene with all sorts of new ideas being tried out. But as we hear in this recorded interview in 1956, that wasn't the case.
There wasn't any soloists around that interested me. They didn't seem to be playing anything. They weren't making changes good. You know, the changes were kind of sad. And I listened. I went around. I heard all the musicians, and I used to go to all the sessions and everything. You know, I didn't understand. But I was surprised. You know, because I'd been over there for so long. You know, and I thought by the time I came back, I thought the musicians here would be much further advanced. You know, but it was just like when I left.
Hawkins was anxious to find a new direction. And he soon found it in the young musicians who were creating bebop. He jammed at Minton's and later hired Dizzy Gillespie, Monk, and many others. He wanted to learn more about the music Gillespie and the other beboppers were developing. Critic Ira Gittler.
He was interested in what was happening in the subsequent years, the late, you know, 39 into 40, 41. That's when it really started to change in the sessions at Minton's and Monk. And Hawk, of course, was one of the people who appreciated Monk and used him in his band in 1944, a session later than the one we were just mentioning. So he was interested in what the young musicians were doing and told Bud Johnson to kind of put together a band for him. And that's how that record day came about. And Dizzy had written Woody and You for Woody Herman, that's why the title, and Woody never recorded it.
Gillespie recorded Woody and You and Disorder at the Border with Coleman Hawkins Orchestra in 1944. The group also featured drummer Max Roach and tenor saxophonist Don Bias. Gillespie's solos were now more harmonically daring, thanks to his work with Monk, and his trumpet technique and ideas had expanded beyond the Roy Eldridge tradition. Because of Gillespie's bold musical statements, these sessions with Coleman...
Thank you. How close?
Sorry.
The question is very silly because we should be wondering tonight, is there a world? But I could go and talk for 5, 10, 20 minutes about is there a world, because there is really no world, because sometimes I'm walking on the ground and I see right through the ground. And there is no world. And you'll find out. Okay. But they asked me to write an article about the Beat Generation, and it fits right in with the question of the Dean. It's called The Beat Generation. And it's the article is supposed to be about my relationship to the Beat Generation, all that stuff. And it's a very funny article. So I never made a speech, so I'll read it. Okay? This article necessarily will have to be about myself. I'm going all out. That nutty picture of me on the cover of On the Road results from the fact that I had just gotten down from a high mountain where I'd been for 2 months completely alone. And usually I was in the habit of combing my hair, of course, because you have to get rides on the highway and all that. And you usually want girls to look at you as though you were a man, not a wild beast. No commas yet. I'm like Oscar Levin, I gotta hold my heart. But my poet friend, Gregory Corso, opened his shirt and took out a silver crucifix that was hanging from a chain and said, "Wear this and wear it outside your shirt and don't comb your hair." So I spent several days around San Francisco going around with him and others like that to parties, arties, park, jam sessions, bars, poetry readings, churches. Walking, talking poetry in the streets, walking, talking God in the streets. At one point, a strange gang of hoodlums got mad and said, "What right's he got to wear that?" And my own gang of musicians and poets told him to cool it. "Why don't you come back in a million years and tell me all about it, Angel?" Recently, Ben Hecht said to me on TV, "Why don't you, Frank, speak out your mind? What's wrong with this country? Why is everybody afraid of?" Was he talking to me? And all he wanted me to do was speak out my mind against people. He sneeringly brought up Dulles, Eisenhower, the Pope, all kinds of people like that. Habitually that he would sneer at with Drew Pearson. Against the world, he wanted. This is his idea of freedom. He calls it freedom. But who knows, my God, but that the universe is not one vast sea of compassion, actually? A veritable holy honey? Beneath all this show of personality and cruelty? In fact, who knows but that it isn't the solitude of the oneness of the essence of everything? Hama? The solitude of the actual oneness of the unbornness of the unborn essence of everything. Hama? Nay! The true, pure foreverhood. That big, blank potential that can ray forth anything it wants from its pure store. That blazing bliss. Mati Vajrakaruna, the transcendental diamond compassion. This is 2,500 years old. Why should I attack what I love out of life? This is deep. Live your lives out? Ah. Love your lives out. And when they come and stone you, at least you won't have a glass house, just your glassy flesh. But that wild, eager picture of me on the cover of the book On the Road, where I look so beat, goes back much further than 1948, when John Cleland Holmes, author of Gold and The Horn, good book, The Horn, and I were sitting around trying to think up the meaning of the lost generation, subsequent existentialism, and I said, "You know, John, this is really a beat generation." And he leapt up and said, "That's it. That's right. Maybe since I'm supposed to be the spokesman of the Beat Generation, I am only the originator of the term, and around it, the term and the generation taking shape, it should be pointed out that all this beat guts, because there are guts, right? Therefore, it goes back to my ancestors." This is silly. This is paranoid. But it's funny, though. It goes back to my ancestors who were Bretons, who were the most independent group of nobles in all old Europe, who kept fighting Latin France to the last wall. Although a big blonde bosun on the merchant ship snorted when I told him my ancestors were Bretons in Cornwall, Brittany. "Why, we Vikings used to swoop down and steal your nets." All right. Breton, Viking, Irishman, Indian, mad boy. Doesn't make any difference. There is no doubt about the Beat Generation. At least the core of it. Mighty. Being a swinging group of new American men intent on joy. Irresponsibility? Who wouldn't help a dying man on an empty road? No, and the Beat Generation goes back to the wild parties my father used to have at home in the 1920s. In the 1930s in New England, that was so fantastically loud, nobody could sleep for blocks around. When the cops come, they always give them a drink. It goes back to the wild and raving childhood of playing the shadow under windswept trees of New England's gleeful autumn. Gleeful. and the howl of the moon man on the sandbank until we caught him in the tree. He was an older guy, 15. The maniacal laugh of certain neighborhood mad boys and cretins. The furious humor of old gangs playing basketball till long after dark in the park. Go back to those crazy days before World War II when teenagers drank beer on Friday nights at lake ballrooms and worked off their hangovers playing baseball on Saturday afternoon, followed by a dive in the brook. And our fathers wore straw hats like W.C. Fields. Goes back to the completely senseless babble of the Three Stooges, the ravings of the Marx Brothers, the tenderness of Angel Harpo at Harp, too. In fact, here is a poem I've written about Harpo Marx. Harpo, I'll always love you. Oh, Harpo, when did you sing like an angel the last time and play the gray harp of gold? When did you steal the silverware and bug spray the guests? When did your brother find rain in your sunny courtyard? When did you chase your last blonde across the millionaire's lawn with a bait hook on a line protruding from your bicycle? Or when last you powder puffed your white flower face with fish barrel cover? Harpo, who was that lion I saw you with? How did you treat the midget and conk the giant? Harpo, on your recent nightclub appearance in New Orleans, were you old? Were you still chiding with your horn and the cane at your golden belt? Did you still emerge from your pockets another Harpo or screw on new wrists? Was your vow of silence an Indian harp? Because there's a guy in India, you know, who plays the harp. He's made a vow of silence, walks around all over India barefooted, does nothing but play the harp. And showers of impossible music. So, this all goes back to the inky ditties of old cartoons. Felix the Cat with the Irrational Brick. To Laurel and Hardy in the Foreign Legion. To the Golem, horrifying the persecutors of the ghetto. To the quiet sage in the movie about India, unconcerned about the plot, sitting under a tree. To the giggling old Dao Chinaman trotting down the sidewalk of old Clock Gable, Shanghai. Goes back to the holy old Arab, warning the hot bloods that Ramadan is near. You have to warn the hot bloods. Now, since this is a university, we're here to teach, right? Now, I don't think that I can teach anything to any of you any more than you can teach me, because the Lord said that the attainment of enlightenment is neither to be considered a high state nor a low state. Everybody equally attains it, because everybody equally knows, as Allen Ginsberg says, that lightning strikes in the blue sky. See, everybody knows that. Therefore, in conclusion, ladies and gentlemen, I dedicate this poem... Do I read the poem? No. Anyway, you're all out of your minds. And I'm out of my mind.
Woody and You and Disorder at the Border. The Coleman Hawkins Orchestra, featuring Coleman Hawkins tenor saxophone, Dizzy Gillespie trumpet, and Max Roach drums. Recorded in 1944.
Anyway, you're all out of your minds. And I'm out of my mind, and you're out of your minds, and I'm out of my mind. And doesn't that make it equal? Doesn't that make it, like, void? But one final poem, Delton. I have to finish my thing, my daft. I'll go down and beat your head in. Unless you beat my head in. This poem, I dedicate to human suffering and human salvation. You're not listening. The poem goes, Love's multitudinous... I told you, Alan, you... Love's multitudinous boneyard of decay. The spilled milk of heroes. Destruction of silk kerchiefs by dust storm. Caress of heroes blindfolded to posts. Murder victims admitted to this life. Skeletons bartering fingers and joints. The quivering meat of the elephants of kindness being torn apart by vultures. Conceptions of delicate kneecaps. Fear of rats dripping with bacteria. Golgotha cold hope for gold hope. Damp leaves of autumn against the wood of boats. Seahorses delicate imagery of glue. Sentimental, I love you no more. Death by long exposure to defilement. Frightening, ravishing, mysterious beings concealing their sex. Pieces of the Buddha material frozen and sliced microscopically in morgues of the north. The severed garlets more than the sense. And it's like kissing my kitten in the belly. The softness that of the reward that we'll get. Yes, I know.
MacBood is the name of this tune. Knock it off, maestro.
Oh, wait. 1954, Louis Armstrong had the number one record in the nation. The success of Hello Dolly was a remarkable triumph for a man who revolutionized American music nearly 40 years earlier.
Thank you. Greed! Greed! Well, I'm done!